내려가서 쉐디 내가 또 로리기 남자 거 마치 돌듯이 돌듯이 마시나 섬서.
Good evening. So tonight we're starting a new topic, the topic of awarenesses and knowers.
다디 가르람나 로릭 세디 남균네 나가두게 검자 냠네 검자 다치 냠네 제야다 차사 지금 남림 냠네 제바나 전제 거 섬다 카르나 거서 로기 거 기시고 이내 당아도 미수 가르제 디링 로리 거 시야디 디링 딜라 카르시 거서는 로세디 아주 디링 로리 거 로브전 제비 가르하고 그러려나 아주 로비 모세디 가느칠라 거에 율간 율로디 율간에 간에 용고래 세다 근데 로디 나로라 로 미저의 직간에 간에 용고래 세다 근데 로이 지게
So when we engage in Buddhist practice, meditation, then we usually engage in topics such as those found within the Lamrim, or as we've been looking at all here in our weekend classes, and the topic of dependent arising. So whatever practice one is engaging in, whatever Buddhist practice one is engaging in, or topic of meditation, we always talk about the mind. The mind is primary, or primary importance in Buddhist practice. So now in this topic of awarenesses and knowers, or in Tibetan, lorik, then we come to look at what is meant by mind. So we talk about what the essence of mind is, we talk about the various objects that mind observes or holds, and we talk about which minds are of greater importance or of greater benefit perhaps, and which minds less so. So this is some of what's included in this topic of lorik, or awarenesses and knowers. So this topic that we're looking at in Tibetan Lodik, in English, awarenesses and knowers, as just mentioned, is about the mind and the objects that the mind engages with. So continuously, we have minds present. One mind arises after another, it's a continuous mental activity, a process of continuous mental activity. And generally speaking, as we go throughout our daily activities, we don't really pay much attention to our mind. It just continuously is functioning. So we tend not to pay much attention to our mind. But this topic of lorik is all about our mind. This is a process where we come to know mind such as awarenesses and knowers. And this process means we're coming to know our own mind. So through studying this topic well, coming to a good understanding of this topic, we will then have far greater awareness of what is happening in our minds. We'll have far greater understanding of our own mental processes. And this means, or this then aids our awareness of what minds are manifest, what minds are present at the moment, and whether this is a mind that should be developed or whether it's a mind that should be abandoned. So if you think of, for example, in our bathrooms, we all have a mirror. We look in that mirror, we see our face, we see the reflection of our face, and if we have a good look at our face, we'll think, oh, maybe this I need to improve. This is what I need to change. So this topic of alodik serves a similar purpose. It enables us to hold our mirror up to our own minds. As we study this topic alodik, we are creating through this knowledge a mirror to hold up to our own mind, to come to know and understand our own mental processes far better. In this way, we come to understand ourselves better.
Tadi ma shiye de tadi na jisan mangbo shiye de tadi na nang zu ge da chi chi na dam ge deng ge tes je ko ge nga zu ya tes mangbo cha sa shu mo che desen ma chi ma chi di ma shiye de.
The entire text of Lodik is something that we're not going to look at. We're going to look at just the key sections within Lodik. So the text you have in front of you, this is now translator speaking, the text you have in front of you, Genler selected the areas he wants to teach, so that you have before you, and it's about half the length of the entire text. As we see on the cover of our text, the author of our text is Pobajok Mawang Champa Rinpoche. And he was a debate partner of the 13th Dalai Lama. So we can see through that by studying this text, we are studying a text that's in the lineage of the Dalai Lamas. And so this is something that's good to bear in mind because it helps us. It's another way that brings great value to this text, another way that we can value the importance of this text. So the topics I'm going to present from the entire text of Lodik will be the key points. And what I'm going to exclude will be the presentation of opinions or presentations that are of other people other than ourselves. Or to maybe put that more clearly, within the Lodik text, it's divided into the views of others and then our view. And then how our view, and then there's the third section, which our view, our section of debate, which establishes our view as correct. So of those three, I'll be presenting what our view is, not the view that of others, and then the refutation of the view of others, but I'll be presenting, hopefully in a way that's clear, the key points, which are our view within this text.
That is what I'm saying. Do you don't answer ya? Tick, you ever said you're rather carry in a dangle to get toy, tick, you ever said it. She drew the same chair. Dinima, did you ever the chasm? Tick, whoever in the Dubinil that had done by now, you don't you chance it, Nisha, you don't you chance it. That you gen love your dear, that answer you, tick, tick, pa, Jawachi and Tonto can tick. Tongan Hakuhan, Tongan de la Yujin said. Then he gave that check and this in a
So in our translation, if you turn to the inside page where you have this like a little diagram, then next to the contents page, you'll see at the very top is the word, so this is on the left next to the contents page. There's the word existence. So this is everything that exists, or to use a synonym, it's an established basis. So we're talking about this diagram here. So everything that exists can be divided in many ways. One of the ways is to divide it into objects and object possessors. So existence or established basis can be divided into objects and object possessors. So what's the difference between an object? Well, that should be clear, but an object possessor is that which that which possesses the object, that what perhaps we can say observes the object. So everything that exists can be included in these two. Another way to express it, all objects are known by something. That which knows the object, or understands the object, knows the object, is an object possessor. So all established bases are objects. So to understand then what is an object, the way to understand that most clearly is in reliance on a definition. Because the definition will bring out the essence or the entity of what is meant by that which is defined, in this case, an object. The top of page one, we have the section objects, and there is the definition. And the definition of an object is that which is known by an awareness. So whatever is known by an awareness is an object. That which is not known by an awareness is not an object. So that is then the definition of an object, that is which is known by an awareness. So if you think to yourself, so what is the essence of an object or an entity of the object? It is that which is known by an awareness. So we're using the term here, definition, but the meaning, the purpose of a definition is to identify the essence or the entity of that which is defined, in this case, an object.
Rivongi chesna lue rigpa sina rigpa lana topa topa se kuwa chesna lue ha go kore chesna lue ha mo gona me ba reta.
So that which is known by an awareness, so known here, we can understand as that which is realized by an awareness. So this refers to existence. So everything that exists, existence. What are those things that don't exist, such as the horns of a rabbit? So we all know rabbits, they don't have horns. So this is something that doesn't exist. And this is not known by an awareness. Now we come to look at the divisions of objects. So this is the division of objects in general. So this then refers to differing ways that the object can appear, and we have here appearing objects, engaged objects, and thirdly, determined objects.
And the that Jigon Ma Ligre Wada Nyukjidane, Wal Ma Ligre Dine, and the Lolia Jig Nanyu said the Lol Tu, Nan Lolia Shardi, Nanyu said, Lupa Zinia said, they Shin Yu said.
As we progress down through the page, there'll be more detail coming about what is meant by these different ways of, perhaps you can say different ways of relating to an object. So the appearing object, something that appears to the mind. The engaging object is the way the mind engages with the object. So it's an object that the mind engages with as opposed to it appears to the mind. And then the third one we have here is that of a determined object. So not all types of minds have a determined object. Only conceptual consciousnesses have a determined object. So this what has just been mentioned now will be fleshed out as we proceed. And then we have two synonyms, appearing objects of a particular awareness and a held object of that awareness. In other words, appearing objects and held objects are synonymous. And then just to say as an aside, there's a little chart at the bottom of the page. That's of course not from the text. That's not from the text, but it's just to help identify some of these many terms or classify them. Let's take a simple illustration. So we have an eye consciousness, an eye sense consciousness, which would be the object possessor here. And being an object possessor, it has an object that it possesses. And this would be, for example, a flower. So to this consciousness, which is in this illustration an I sense consciousness, which is an object possessor, it then has an appearing object, a held object, because those are the two that are synonymous, and an engaged object. So it has these three, of which two are synonyms, appearing and held objects, and then engaged object. So that an I sense consciousness, eye consciousness or something that sees a flower, has these three objects, appearing with its synonym of held, as well as engaged objects. No mention here of determined objects. Yeah, something to bear in mind. Everything that exists, everything that's in existence, is an appearing object. Everything that exists is an appearing object. To understand this, let's take a simple illustration. So if we think of all the flora throughout this world, all the plants, all of the flora throughout this world, no matter where it's found, we can say correctly that that is food. So you may well say, but I don't need everything that grows in this world or grows in the oceans. I don't need everything like that. And that certainly would be true. But there are things that humans eat, and there are things that humans don't eat. And what humans don't eat, though, is still, that flora is still eaten, such as by kangaroos, or by insects, or a variety of other animals. And to look at it from another perspective, some animals will eat certain types of flora and consider that food, but those animals will not eat. So it's not that one animal needs to eat all types of flora for it to be something that is eaten, for it to be food for some beings. So all flora is eaten by some kind of living being, whether human or animal or one of the classes of animals. So similarly, everything that is an existent or an established base is an appearing object. But it doesn't mean because something is an existent and therefore an appearing object, that it appears to every type of consciousness. said, so here, now let's divide consciousnesses into two classes. It can be divided in many different ways, as we'll see, but we'll divide it for now into two. That which is conceptual, and that is what is non-conceptual. So all appearing objects, all existence, everything that exists is an appearing object to either a conceptual consciousness or a non-conceptual consciousness. And to understand this a little further, everything that exists, we've just said, can be is an appearing object. But let's divide everything that exists, established spaces, into two. And the easiest way to divide it into two is impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena. So everything that exists is either permanent or impermanent. And being in existence, all impermanent phenomena are appearing objects, all permanent phenomena are appearing objects. But they appear to different classes or different categories of consciousness. So, appearing objects that are impermanent objects, they appear to conceptual consciousnesses. Permanent objects, they are the appearing objects to non-conceptual consciousnesses. So say the last line again. Impermanent phenomena are the appearing objects to appearing objects to non-conceptual consciousnesses. Permanent phenomena are the appearing objects to conceptual consciousnesses.
So let's divide
awarenesses or consciousness into another category of two, and this will be direct perception and conceptual consciousnesses. So we've just mentioned conceptual consciousnesses, and now we'll also include, we'll put as its partner this time, direct perception. So the appearing object for direct perception is impermanent phenomena. The appearing object for direct perception is impermanent phenomena. And as we heard before, the appearing object to conceptual consciousnesses are permanent phenomena. So here, what we're hearing that is new is that we can divide awarenesses into direct perception and conceptual consciousnesses. And what we heard about conceptual consciousnesses a moment before is the same, that the appearing object to conceptual consciousnesses are permanent phenomena. And the appearing object, but now what's new, the appearing object to direct perception is impermanent phenomena. This illustration I gave a moment ago that all flora is suitable to be eaten and is an object that is food for some kind of being. This isn't found in a text. It's not in the expanded version of this text. This is just my own example. So you know biology very well. So you may well think of a type of flora that is not eaten by any being. I don't know. But I'm using it as an illustration. That's something that I assume, that all types of flora are eaten by some kind of being.
Dangbo ngosumi nanyu lagyore, ngosumi sunyu labigore, chesan chide, ngosumi sunyu labna, ngosumi nanyu labna, ngobor labdigore, ming labdang kawale madu, dondar ngobor esine.
Just to repeat, so we've just heard that the appearing object for direct perception is impermanent phenomena. And as we heard a few segments before, a synonym for an appearing object is a held object. So therefore, equally, one can say that the held object of direct perception is impermanent phenomena, or whatever phenomenon is impermanent, it is a held object for direct perception. Because held object is a synonym for appearing object. So we've just said then that any impermanence, any and every impermanent phenomenon is a appearing or a held object of direct perception. And why is that? Because a direct perceiver realizes the object in a manifest manner. In other words, clearly, because there's no generic image at all, there's no generic image involved. So the direct perception realizes its appearing object or its held object in a manifest manner, which means clearly, because there is no involvement of a generic image. So what is a generic image? We'll come to this. I know it's a brand new term. It will come. So then, permanent phenomena. So permanent phenomena, as we heard before, but now we just repeat with the synonyms. Any and all phenomena that are permanent, they are the appearing objects, or the synonym, a held object for conceptual consciousness. So now just to go back to our definition, what is the definition of an object? That which is known by an awareness. So what we can understand from this is, if we wonder, how do we know whether something exists or not? Something exists if it is known. If it's not known, doesn't exist. It's a non-existent.
Carol 아니 롤 맞아 봐. 수지게 한 먹어 가지고 코로나 유지되지. 여러분들 민두 와서. 민두 왔다.
디디 민두 그때
그러세 유세디 유세 유에다 메세드 로지로 코로나 하고 로지로 뛰면 뛰네. 그 여봐 샤고 그래서. 그와 그 하고 로지 메나 그 여래라야 말 봐. 진짜 유 여봐 여봐 세디 강화에 롤 맞아 봐. 코로나 뭐니 주바디 메와래다. 디나 이렇게 된데 셰바 찍바래. 제가 유세 여래 여 말해서 해야 롤 파 뛰네. 뛰네 여봐 샤고 그래. 하고서 그 여봐지 하고
요는 디스코 톰슨 같은 거만 아서 디 다카리 내출당 나서 맞춤 바래.
나 나서 니스 뭐 나도 뛰는데 세리 그게 맞지 와지. 나 뛰는데 세 찌찌를 뛰네 두고로 마도 강라에 맞대 봐대 랑원이 주바세 여 말했으니 셰르 와. 어 디나 신 찍바래 제가 유세디 여봐세디 찌를 뛰네 술을 뛰네 여서 유신 코 하고 건 로딜레 뛰네 여바레 마도 로딜라 마티네 마티오바나 코용하여 말레스 제가 로레 뛰네 용도 했어요.
So this to understand this we can draw a comparison perhaps a comparison with what you heard many times in the teachings we've just finished on dependent arising where we heard that everything that exists exists dependently. Everything that exists exists independent on something. There is nothing that exists independently. There's nothing that exists independently. Everything exists dependent on something, dependent one thing on another. So those of you who came to the dependent arising teachings, you heard this many times. So this is similar here. If you want to know whether something exists or not, it depends on whether it is known by an awareness. And that then is the meaning of our definition here. And this is actually a very good example then of this of dependence arising of one thing being dependent on another, because this is an illustration of mutual dependency, because an object is dependent on being known by an awareness, and likewise an awareness is dependent on having an object. So for there to be an object, it needs to be known by an awareness, and likewise for there to be an awareness, it needs to know an object. So here, this is an illustration of mutual dependency, of one thing being dependent on another. The object is dependent on an awareness knowing it, and likewise, an awareness is dependent on having an object that it knows.
And this Murab and another Chilam Rim Tone, Shevaina, Nanazugi, Chicket, Kiva Chimiki, Chicket, Corsore, Nanazu, Tigi, Duyaki, Tigi, Nanazu, Diawatch, Gogudus and be Samus illegal water, Tilo Chagua, Ndi, Digi, Donyaki, Donyaki, Dumbati, Sesa, Digi, Digi, Donyaki, Dumbati, Lore, Locha, Di, Udi Garrison, Digi, Dida. 제가 네 대기디 대화단 기보디 유디셰 아 저기 디고 대발로디 되녀기 두바들로 차로 제가 로 아주 로세 로셰 그 유디가래라나 디기셰 제가 그 유디 네 로디다 어느 저기 대기 되비 되녀기 두바디 야 아 저기 슉체라 공고 그래서 시야디 아니 네 뉴바디 체 뉴바가제 체베 이네 소소길라 아니 저기
So if this is all sounding a little bit alien, then let me bring it place it in a context that you're much more familiar with. So if you think of a general Lamrim talk or presentation, you'll hear that we talk about that all beings want happiness and want to be freed of suffering. So this wish for happiness and lasting, stable happiness, this happiness that one wishes for, that is the object. One wishes for what? For an object, which is happiness. And this wishing for, or this aspiration for happiness, this is a mind. That's the object possessor. And through meditation, as one develops this mind that's striving to attain lasting, stable happiness, one is developing the strength of the awareness, or the object possessor, this awareness. So here we have an object, happiness, and it's being held or known by an awareness, which is a mind aspiring for happiness. So this is how we would utilize Lodik in the context of the Lamrim. And then similarly, in the Lamrim teachings, we hear that we need to come to know the faults of samsara, need to meditate well on the faults of samsara so as to develop the wish to attain liberation from the sufferings of samsara. So here, when one is meditating on the faults of samsara, what is the object? Faults of samsara. And the mind that sees the faults or realizes the faults of samsara, that is the object possessor, the awareness, that is meditating on the object, faults of samsara. And as one develops the strength of this mind, the conviction of this mind that is realizing the object, the fault of samsara, then the wish for liberation, a second mind, grows ever stronger. As one cultivates this mind, the first one we heard about now, that mind that aspires for its object of happiness, so the mind that aspires for happiness, as we cultivate this and it grows ever stronger within us, then one may wonder, well, what's the benefits of generating and cultivating the strength of such a mind? If one just cultivates the awareness that is the wish for the object of happiness, if one just cultivates that mind alone, it's not going to come about the achieving of the result of lasting stable happiness. One requires further qualities. One requires that there is a need to accept reincarnation. One needs to accept the continuity of life, that there are future lives. Otherwise, without accepting reincarnation, it's actually very difficult to attain realizations of the Dharma. Because in order to achieve lasting stable happiness, developing the awareness or the mind that wishes for happiness alone will not bring that about. One also needs to cultivate the mind that realizes the sufferings of cyclic existence. One needs to develop a strong understanding of the suffering nature of samsara. And this is very difficult to bring about if one doesn't accept reincarnation. So therefore, in order to generate a state of lasting happiness, one needs to also accept reincarnation.
And in
To actually bring about the attainment of lasting stable happiness, a state of liberation, then to merely develop even a very powerful wish for happiness, that will not bring it about. It needs a companion mind, a mind that reflects on the object of the sufferings of samsara and comes to understand this well. But even these two realizations on their own will not bring about a state of lasting, stable happiness. These two minds need the assistance of a third mind, and this is the mind that understands and accepts past and future lives, accepts reincarnation. And this is because in order to achieve a state of liberation from suffering, a state of lasting stable happiness, one needs to persevere through many difficulties, to develop a mind of such strength, a mind that transcends suffering, a mind that attains the state of the desired lasting stable happiness, requires great strength. And therefore, this aspiration for lasting stable happiness also needs the assistance of the mind that believes in reincarnation. Because when these three come together, the aspiration for lasting stable happiness, the clear understanding of the suffering nature of cyclic existence, and that there are future lives or lives still to come, then one has the sufficient strength of mind to strive for liberation.
And tablam karu gore sedu andelya ani chinga jugi nyeje tomya chagor nyeje nyeje tsurum soya diba lunga yusum nyeba nyeje ma chigmes mi tsurum soya di di chagor jela kewa chima digi jugi tandala di kugwe denza di kewa chima digi kan sugu gore lana den dadan jugi ngupen jor kaje sabe na digi kewa chima digi tu mare jisan kewa chima digi jubiye de karu gore sene ani nyeje tempe tsurum sungu gore es ani de nyamne jaya de tsurum sungu gore sada ne kewa chima ge dumal thaya di nyeje tempe tsurum soya da kewa chima ngana jugi digi yoya di ne yu dewa da sem kiwa yoya da ani chi tunje yakwa yoya la ngana jugi chimpe nyamne da suibe nyamne jaya gore se di nyamne chida shi yoya da jisan kewa chima ge kuwa samtang yoya da dini dus jene sungdom digi le yoya da dini dati degi dengirgi dunba de dang gaziye shuk che yoba ina an dunga da tato yoke samlongi gaziye shuk che yoba ina dini tse digi gejo zhuya liya an nubo shar dang gore
The reason that one needs to have this understanding and acceptance of reincarnation for one to be able to actually attain the desired goal of lasting, stable happiness, happiness that isn't interrupted by even a moment of suffering, is because understanding that this mere life will soon be followed by another life, that this process of uncontrolled rebirth and psychic existence just continues from life after life after life, that there is a body that will be taken after this body ceases. With this clear understanding, it helps in dependence on other meditations to turn away from grasping for and striving primarily for the happiness of this life. So this innate wish we all have to experience only happiness right now is primarily focused on I want to be happy now, and we think and our activities therefore are motivated to achieve happiness in this mere life. But if we have a clear understanding of this continuous process of reincarnation, that we start to value this long stream of potential future lives more than this life. And therefore, we start to develop our perspective, will these actions I'm engaging in now, physical, verbal, mental activities, bring about the desired happiness over a long period of time, not just this one mere life? And similarly, in terms of suffering, none of us wants to suffer. None of us wants to experience a moment of pain or misery. But if we continue just to strive to abandon, to avoid suffering in this life, that is not going to help us much in our future lives. Rather, if we develop a broader perspective, we will then look at our physical, verbal, and mental activities and see it in the context of what results will come from this in my future lives. And that will help guide us to avoid even subtle negativities. So through thinking like this, our perspective changes, and we see that it's imperative that we live an ethical life, we develop an ethical mind, because that is the primary cause for continued good rebirths. And moreover, to ensure that in our future lives we have good conditions, good material conditions, we need to cultivate the mind of generosity as well as cultivate the mind of patience. So these lead to the cultivation of the causes to have good rebirths to aid our spiritual progression in future lives. And that only comes about in a powerful way. The cultivation of these causes only comes about in a powerful way if one accepts future lives. So through accepting future lives, it leads to a great strength of mind. It can be called a courageous mind. Courageous in the sense of turning away from the accumulation of causes for suffering and turning towards the accumulation of causes for happiness. And this way, through seeing this stream of lives before one develops a powerful aspiration for liberation. And this means all our activities in this life are dedicated to accumulating virtue that will aid our spiritual progression throughout our stream of lives. So a great strength of mind, a courageous mind, comes from thinking like this.
We all have as an object the wish for happiness, so the happiness as an object, and then as an awareness the wish for that. This is something that all beings have, but the stronger this awareness is, the wish to achieve a state of happiness, the more one will strive to achieve it, to accumulate the causes that lead to that result. And similarly, we all have a wish and awareness to be freed of suffering. So that should be the object, freed of suffering. And the stronger this wish to be freed of suffering, then the less non-virtue we are going to engage in. We're much more likely to avoid engaging in non-virtue. And these two minds, if they have as a companion, not just the mere belief in future lives, but an active awareness, your mental presence, awareness in a sense of being aware of something, of being aware of our future lives. If we have that sense of being aware of our future lives, that will power this mind that strives to achieve the causes that lead to happiness, and the mind that strives to avoid the causes that lead to suffering. If we only have the wish for happiness and the wish to be freed of suffering, but we lack the awareness of our future lives, then we'll very easily engage in activities just for short-term benefit. We will deceive others, take advantage of others, because we will see, oh, I will get this benefit. But we're not thinking about our future lives. And this mistaken way of thinking that comes from not being aware of our future lives, or having an awareness of our future lives,
is what leads to so many of the problems in our world, whether it's conflict in the home, or in between communities, or between nations. It's just thinking about short-term benefit for oneself, not having a broader perspective. Whereas if one develops a powerful wish, this mind that wishes for happiness, and as well as the mind that wishes to be freed of suffering, combining it with a strong awareness of the stream of continuity of future lives that lay before us, this will lead to a great strength of mind that will lead us to keep a mind of ethics ever present and act under it, a mind of generosity ever present, as well as patience and joyous perseverance, and thereby create many causes, powerful causes, that will lead to benefit for ourselves as well as for others, that will lead to benefit in this very life as well as our future lives. So therefore, in brief, in this topic here, we're talking about objects and we're talking about awarenesses. So the stronger the awareness is to achieve a virtuous object, the stronger the awareness is to avoid a particular object, say suffering, the greater these virtuous minds will grow within us. And similarly, we'll understand which awarenesses, which minds need to be abandoned, which cause harm. So this is how we can utilize this topic in a very relevant way. So through what's just been said, I hope you have a little bit more of an appreciation for the importance of this topic. So let's now return more explicitly to the text. So we're talking about objects and object possessors. And we've heard that an object is that which is known by an awareness. So let's recap a little bit of what has been said, and I'll bring in just one new term. So whatever is a functioning thing, or a synonym for something that performs a function, is something that's impermanent. So impermanent phenomena, functioning thing, these are the appearing objects to direct perception. So this we heard earlier. Impermanent phenomena or functioning things are the appearing objects for direct perception. Now, we all sitting here, and if I ask you to think about your home, now you can think about your home very clearly, just saying it immediately, you recall your home and what it looks like. Maybe you'll see the front door, or maybe you'll be inside and seeing a particular room. So there's some kind of appearance to your mind. So when I say, think about your home, there's an appearance to your mind. That is an appearing object. So there's an object that appears, it's an appearing object, and that particular mind is a conceptual consciousness. It's not a direct perception, it's a conceptual consciousness. So when I say, think about your home, you're not directly perceiving your home, so it's a conceptual consciousness. The appearing object is whatever way you are now thinking of your home. That object, so we heard earlier, the object for the appearing object of a conceptual consciousness is permanent. So you are not, when I say think of your home, seeing your home directly. Rather, you have a mental image, or the term we're using here, a generic image of your home,
And that is the appearing object. So when you think of your home, that object that appears to your mind is the appearing object. It's not your home, but it is a generic image of your home. That generic image is the appearing object of this consciousness, which is a conceptual consciousness. And this generic image is permanent. And the difference, amongst the differences between now this conceptual consciousness recalling your home and a direct perception, is the conceptual consciousness isn't clear like a direct perception is. Rather, one comes to the object, one's home, by means of a generic image. And that generic image is permanent, it's appearing object, and it's appearing object of the conceptual consciousness.
So in this topic of awareness and knowers, as you've already seen in our very first class, there's a lot of new terminology, new terminology, and that can make this topic challenging over the period that one is becoming familiar with this terminology. So therefore, let's summarize a little bit of what we've looked at tonight, just to try and reinforce this terminology that is new for many of you. So we're looking at objects and object possessors. So an object is that which is known by an awareness. And what is an object possessor then? That which knows an object. So that which possesses its object is the object possessor. And that's one thing we've looked at tonight. What is meant by objects? We've started to look at that, and we've referred briefly to object possessors, but that we'll come to in much more detail. So an object is something that is known by an awareness. There is no object that is not known by an awareness. Otherwise, it couldn't exist. It has to be, we see in the definition, an object has to be known by an awareness to exist. Which means objects are dependent arisings. They are dependent on awareness. Likewise, awareness or object possessor has an object. There's no awareness or object possessor that doesn't possess an object. There's no awareness that doesn't have an object. So therefore, awareness is also a dependent arising. It's dependent on having an object.
So we've looked tonight at this relationship of dependency, of mutual dependency between object and object possessor, or object and its knowing awareness, or the awareness that knows the object. So we've looked at tonight and briefly, when we've had an introductory look at objects and object possessors and their relationship, their interdependence.
So what I'd like you to take away from this class is to have the this understanding that I've just mentioned in the summary, that every mind, every awareness has an object. Every object has an awareness. So we know our minds are rather busy. We always have minds, and they always have objects. Every mind has an object. For example, if we're angry, there's an object. So angry is an awareness, and it's angry with an object. There is an object that anger. There's an object for that mind, for that awareness. So usually we may be angry with someone, and that someone would be the object, and therefore our mind comes about independence on that object. Likewise, if we're in love, we're in love with someone. So the mind of being in love, this is a mind, an object possessor. It possesses an object, and that's the person that we are in love with. So have some... So have a look at what's going on inside and see this relationship between every mind has an object, every object has a mind, this relationship of dependency between the two. So I appreciate that what you've heard tonight has been new, has been quite different, especially the terminology. So I hope it's not too boring. And if one perseveres, it becomes much clearer. What one needs to overcome is the new terminology and become clearer with what that terminology means, and then the text becomes much simpler. When you are walking around later, or you're doing your meditation, keep this in mind, that I have a thought right now, as you're listening here, or throughout your attack activities, many thoughts. A thought is a mind, and it has an object. And observe that, become aware of that process. So unusually we finished a little early tonight, so we have plenty of time for questions. If you have some questions, then please do feel free to ask.
Gyatso. Just this table at the bottom of page 1, you introduced another type of object, observed object. I presume that's a neutral.
Yes.
What's the difference between observed object and engaged object?
Sure, and for both direct perception and conceptual consciousness.
For the
Okay. So the question is that in the chart at the bottom of the page, there's the term observed object, which isn't on this page at all. It comes a couple of pages later. So what is the difference between an observed object and an engaged object? Jugyo dang mikyo de kepa karere. Ngunsum dang tokme, tokpa, netang nika. Jugyo?
Jugyo da kasa mikyo se, re, Jugyo se de korong yugyo zore de le, da bine,
Kono Jugyo se pinpe.
Jugyo se, korong yugyo zore, gare zingyo na, di zinye yu de le, Jugyo se ora, Jugyo se ora, zinye yu de le, Jugyo se. Da mikyo lab de korong le, nang de hegi yu de le, mikyo se ora. Chita, bine ngara zuge, chike, medo shil tawai na, mikyo sheba di medo da tawai na, medo di mikyo sheba di ki zingyo rwa, chita medo khoro mikyo sheba di zinda yu, jugyo na re, medo di mikyo sheba nangyo re, nangyo re, nika re de, jugyo da nangyo nika re de, medo di mikyo sheba de la, nangyo re, jugyo re, nika cha de re. Korong zimbe chane, delia yu di zimbe chane, jugyo se mikta gore. Korong mikyo sheba la nangyo chane, ko nangyo se mikta, mikyo se mikta gore.
So generally there's not much difference, but let's look at it like this. So we can say the engaged object is what one apprehends. The object one apprehends, it, we can call the engaged object, or we see the synonym here, the object or the mode of apprehension. Then the observed object, we could say, is what appears to the mind. What appears to the mind. The observed object, we can say, is what appears to the mind. Appears to the mind. So now that's talking in general. But let's take a flower that is seen by an eye sense consciousness. So here, the flower is the appearing object, it's the engaged object, it's the observed object. It's all three. So in the illustration of an eye sense consciousness, engaging or seeing a flower, then all three, appearing object, engaged object, observed object, are the flower. But we can say, though, that generally the engaged object is what one apprehends, and the observed object is what appears to the mind. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so just,
I think this is the same question. It is, what is the difference between the appearing object and the engaged object?
Yeah, that's the same question. Same question.
So still
don't.
I'm not getting
it. No problem. Kati dang chikpare. And nangyo? The nangyo dang. So the appearing and the engaged, did you say? Oh, no, different question. Appearing and engaged object. Yeah? Nangyo dang chukyo, de ni kia pa karere. Nangyo dang chukyo.
Ta mene, ta denga do, ngosum gi de la nangyo se da, ne, tenga na chuki, kaanse le nangyo labdi, lo de la ya, nangyo kengi yu de la nangyo se kuro. Ju yu se kuro lo di ki, ta rapa chide zinbi ki, zinbi ki, zinbi ki yu di, zinyu, ju yu se kuro. Chisa, tene inza da, deji, ngantu ki, medo tongyu ngonsum digi la sheba ina medo di korongu medo tongyu ngonsum digi nangyu koron nanguwarwa nangwa chane koron nangyu yasi ta ngonsum digi medo di zimbi chane medo di ku jugyu ri esa jik nangyu di jugyu sheba re na yaa jik yaa tokpa la cha yandu yaa di yaa dios kewa rukho re tokpa la tokpa la cha na kare shikho rasa ne ta ngonsum medo di zimbi tokwa chi medo hong tokwa chi yorwa tokpa digi medo di zimba zay medo di ko tokpa digi juyure. Ta medo de tokpa de la, kor medo dobu naya chiyore de, tokpa naya, chay naya chay dunji se chiyore wa de. Di dunji di, medo ki, dunji di, ane tokpa de naya chiyore, dunji di, tokpa di naya yore, juyu ma re. Ta tokpa di naya yore de, tokpa ni juyu ni la, chabar yore de, koni gawa re. Ta ngonsum la, miki ngonsum la, naya yore de, juyu ni gawa ma re, nige yore.
So we, to understand the objects, we then look at the different awarenesses. Yeah? So we look at direct perception and conceptual consciousness. The object will be a flower. So for a direct perception, direct perception of a flower, then the appearing object is just the flower. The engaged object is the flower. Objects is for both types of objects, the object is the same, a flower. What is different, though, with this direct perception is the way the mind relates to it. So we could say the object that appears to a direct perception is a flower, and that's an appearing object to that direct perception. That direct perception that engages with the flower, then that is the engaged object. So the object is the same, flower, but in one case, the direct perception engages with it, or apprehends it, yeah, grasps at it. And the other one appears. So we can see the difference more from the subject side. But the object side, it stays the same, a flower. Okay. So that's for direct perception. Then conceptual consciousness, there's a clear difference between them. So for conceptual consciousness, or a synonym is thought. So that's quite clear. If it's a conceptual consciousness, a thought, so you're not seeing the flower. So here you're calling a flower. So there, when the conceptual consciousness engages with the actual flower, that's the engaged object. The appearing object, what appears to the conceptual consciousness, is a generic image of the flower. So the generic image of the flower is the appearing object for conceptual consciousness, whereas the actual flower is the engaged object for conceptual consciousness.
So what I'm not understanding is, why is the generic image or object considered to be permanent? I mean, clock, table, chair, appearing. I thought that a clock and a table and a chair were just depending on rising.
Sure.
I don't understand this concept of permanence in relation to generic
objects. Good. So why is a generic image permanent?
Generic image,
mental image, yeah. Dunchi? Tapare. Karizene.
Karilene, Lolia, Topalia. Chikhe karsuru tokpala nawa chi mado korongi pini ngaazu dusta samadene pene kangparu samdana ngaazu kangparu sam lol ya pichi nawa dhukhen nawa chi tuwa ti takwale diyore karsane ko kabungwane maare de dusine di kangparu chi ngaazu liya tokpala kha nawa shar dhukhen nawa dhukhen chiyorwa de tene nawa nawa chi takpare de
So the generic image is what appears to conceptual consciousness. So let's say you're thinking of your home. So you were calling this image of your home, which isn't dependent on causes and conditions. It's just the thought that we're calling.
It's a mental fabrication.
Possibly so. Yeah? But it's permanent. It doesn't change momentarily. That the image of your home doesn't change momentarily. Not your home itself, mm-hmm. but the image of your home.
Tokpa liya, shaa diwa naa xin ji sui huwa chi. Chisang kangpa dhubiwa maa di naa kangpi ki di niki tokpa la naa wii kangpi naa wii naa wa chi rup diwa. Di naa wa di toa
So I'm sure some of you here have had your own homes built, or maybe even some of you work as architects. So at the time of the home being just a mere drawing, so the ground hasn't even been broken, you will be probably quite excited about your lovely new home, and you'll have an image. You'll have a picture. You'll picture what is to be built, what will be your home. Nothing's there. So that is an image that you have created. And that is a permanent image. It's not something that, it's not an impermanent phenomenon. George?
So, if I compare that, what you just said, to the hairs of a rabbit, what's the difference then?
The horns of a rabbit?
Oh, not horns of a rabbit.
So the generic image being permanent, and the horns of a rabbit?
Well, that image of the home was an empty object.
Yes.
Which has not been built.
Yes.
The horns of a rabbit is also a mental object.
Yes. Okay.
What's the difference?
Okay. Then, ribongira, de dunchire, semgi yulchikre. Then, dunchire, then, masuiki nang, nang de young dunchire. Then, kyopakare.
Ribonga resne, dunjimar, ho, you, ho, yomarwa. Mandulia lole, I tenichi, shagore. Diganeshagore, lemna. And the Tarum Bun at the Ganesh hours, and Tarum Bun
これ、ガナガネスナーレラン、アムチョでルチュソアレコ、ミディアムチョでルチュ、アムチョトンジ、ミディレ、ラジョブジトン、ラジョロビトンアレコ。トンジェネデルチュジェネ、テントパテリア、ジボンゲラジョでナソンレ、ナソン、ディナワでトクタパレソ。ジボンゲラジョホロンヨマロワ。ディコソ、ギネエダンタディデペカプラ、ネセムラリボンゲラ、セトゥケレ。
So
the example of the horns of a rabbit refers to when you in the distance you see a little animal, that's a rabbit. And there are these big ears. But you don't really know what a rabbit is. You think, oh, that's those are horns on that rabbit's head. So then your eyes are mistaken. You think you're seeing a rabbit with horns, but you're not, because this doesn't exist. So the horns of a rabbit is a non-existence, but you think you're seeing this, but you're mistaken. And this then is a non-existent. So that's different.
What about an idea of an inventor?
Mm-hmm.
He has a mental image, but the image does not exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there is no rabbit
with
horns, so it's a non-existent.
Mm.
But a completely new phenomenon.
So, what about something that an inventor is creating that is currently a non-existent but will become an existent? Then, Michi Kong Karichala, Sapa Sakyang Chik Suiki Samsul Yode, and Zamani Tokla de Yomade, Sapa Sakyang Suikide. Then, the Ribunkira Nangjin, because Mika Zamani Tokla Yomade.
The Lola Shadi Dunjiti. The Jala Sapa Sakyang Zugin sent me some sort of Ribun Ranajin that Yomarwa. Ribun Nangjin Yor Yomare. In a Lolia.
チャラディサバサジャンスユースミロリアクチャラディネスユースオブダチャサジシャルロリアジシャルゴロワデニギルトパレナンディエディデンジリエスワタパレスワデニギチャラモニディドゥヨマラワデネゴソユニディメパレペヤマニヨパレデチャラモニディヨマラメマラワジボナナシリイネリボンラディマオバネジュネジュンミシバジワデチャラサバサジャンスデマオバネジュンシバシレタ Poisson, then Ribongira Samna, then it don't she serve to get a mother. Mare. Okay, then it is.
Tenji dire che da de. Da de chala sa ba sa jang zhu ho sen be samlo shor ba. Sammo na le ya chala sa ba sa jang di ni shor le chala cha san zhu de re. Tok ba de le nang go re. Din na wa di denji re sta ba re che. Chala wen ne di yo ma zhu yo ma ro wa. Ribon ran na shi re yo ma re. Ji ba re. De ribon ra jo de yo ma ti ne. Tok ba le ya ra jo ro ji ribon ko le ra jo du sen be na wa chi di go re. Na wa li go. Din yi di ji ba re ko yi. Inang kebara gariyo sene, chala sabo soge zhugin sepe duenji shiwa naashi maungpa na chala diro wichi suesi bari. Inang ribon ra naashin toko la shiwa naashin, ribon go la rakiya di maungpa na yomisi bari, tingi kebara dire.
So when the inventor is creating their new invention in their mind at the planning stage, they're forming a mental image, a generic image. So that generic image is permanent, and that generic image exists, but the object does not exist in the world. The object is a non-existent. The generic image, they've created this in their mind, so that's there. The difference, though, with the horns of a rabbit is that in the future, there may well be this new invention. The horns of the rabbit are yet to grow, so that's not going to ever exist. So the difference is more to do with the object, whether it exists in the world or ever will, but in terms of the mental image of this non-existence, there it's the same, because they're both mental images. Okay? It becomes clearer, I'm sure. I have confidence.